Hello, my name is Sir Andrew Davis. I'm the music director of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and I'd like to speak to you about Mozart's Don Giovanni. The excerpts you will hear are from an EMI Classics recording featuring William Schimmel as Don Giovanni, Samuel Ramey as Leporello, Cheryl Studer as Donna Anna, Carol Van Ness as Donna Elvira, Frank Lopardo as Don Ottavio, Suzanne Mensah as Zerlina, Natale De Carolis as Mazzetto, and Jan Hendrik Rotering as the Commendatore. Riccardo Muti conducts the Vienna Philharmonic. Special thanks to Nicholas Ivor Martin for his help in preparing this commentary. That brief excerpt from the overture begins with the minor chords associated with the Commendatore, the old man whom Don Giovanni will kill in the opera's first scene. Or, more accurately, those are the chords associated with the old man's ghost when he comes back as an animated statue in the opera's final scene to spirit Giovanni off to hell. After a mere 8 measures of music, Mozart shakes off the darkness and we are in a happy major key. The transition happens with lightning speed, yet with a deftness that prepares us for each step that follows. This is not the shocking break with the past that Wagner gives us in the overture to Tristan and Isolde. There, Wagner unpacks the music of an entire opera from almost a single jarring chord. Mozart's Don Giovanni can shock us too, but it does so by using the familiar to create complexity and depth. Don Giovanni is Mozart's middle opera of the 3 he wrote with the librettist Lorenzo da Ponte, and it is filled with characters and situations that were already clichés at the time of the opera's premiere in 1787. The libertine who meets his doom, the so-called hell mouth into which the sinner is thrown, the comic servant who always complains, the jealous woman, the moralizing husband. But Mozart and da Ponte use these stock figures as building blocks with which to create something stunningly original. Don Giovanni is a work in which the complexity and economy of means fuse in a way that has caused generations of artists and musicians to call it the perfect opera. The opera opens with Leporello complaining about the hours he has to keep to be Don Giovanni's servant. The complaining servant is a familiar figure in Italian comic opera, although Leporello's complaint may be unique. The poor man never gets any sleep because his rakish master is in and out of every lady's boudoir in Europe. So Leporello has to work nights. The melody is what you would expect from this character, a basso buffo drawn from a long line of doctors and dons. Dr. Bartolo, Dr. Dulcamara, Don Pasquale, Don Magnifico, Don Alfonso, you get the picture. What follows is an even more dramatic about-face than we found in the overture. A masked Don Giovanni enters, pursued by Donna Anna, screaming for help. Her call is answered by her father, the Commendatore. He challenges Don Giovanni. But when Donna Anna goes to get reinforcements, Don Giovanni fights and kills the Commendatore. Donna Anna returns with her fiancé Don Ottavio to find her father dead. So much for a light evening in the theatre. But what happened exactly? The murder of the Commendatore, Donna Anna's screams, and Don Giovanni's haste to get away all make us suspect the worst, that Don Giovanni raped her. But did he? The story of a seducer who comes to a bad end was not new even in Mozart's time, but Mozart's librettist, the Venetian poet Lorenzo da Ponte, took the story from a 17th century play by a Spanish monk named Tirso de Molina. The title of the play is The Trickster of Seville and the Stone Guest. The trickster of the title is Don Giovanni, and the stone guest is the statue of the Commendatore, who comes to supper at the end to drag Giovanni off to hell. In the play, Donna Anna willingly makes love to her fiancé, Don Ottavio, only to discover after the fact that the man in her bed is not Don Ottavio. This is why, in the opera's opening scene, she demands that Don Giovanni unmask. She doesn't know his identity. Modern audiences call this rape. But what were Mozart and Da Ponte thinking? They were men of the Enlightenment, but the truth is they probably saw an element of comedy in this. Da Ponte himself was something of a rake. Only 8 years previous to the premiere of Don Giovanni, the poet was put on trial by the Venetian Republic for, quote, public concubinage, unquote, and, quote, abduction of a respectable woman, unquote. The woman was his married mistress who co-owned a brothel with him, so one can reasonably question Venice's use of the word abduction, or, for that matter, respectable. Brought to trial, Da Ponte was convicted and banished from Venice for 15 years. When Don Giovanni premiered in Prague in 1787, the poet had therefore served half of his sentence. If Da Ponte and Mozart would have seen some humour in this opening scene, Tirso de Molina, the Spanish author of the play, saw something else, dishonour. And of course, both viewpoints were exclusively male. The Spanish playwright refers to Don Giovanni in the title of his play as a trickster, but the light-hearted implication of that translation is misleading. He would have done better to use the title of Mozart's opera, which is Il dissoluto punito, ossia il Don Giovanni. That means the dissolute punished. Ossia is just the or, indicating that Don Giovanni is the subtitle, not the title. Tirso de Molina was a Roman Catholic monk, and he was a Spanish man of the 17th century. In his view of the universe, whether or not Donna Anna was a willing participant in her own seduction was entirely irrelevant. Don Giovanni had committed numerous sins, and they were all mortal. He had seduced a respectable woman, which was a crime not against her, but against her fiancé and Don Giovanni's friend, Don Ottavio. He had committed murder. And yes, all that free love was bad too, although seducing the peasant girl Zerlina would probably have been acceptable because she was lower class. The opening scene ends with Don Ottavio promising Donna Anna vengeance against her unknown assailant, a vow that would have warmed Tirso de Molina's vengeful heart. That revenge will take the rest of the evening, but this is not a problem, since Anna and Ottavio have long memories. Donna Elvira now appears, a soprano also cursed with a long fuse. She is searching for the lover who abandoned her. That lover is Don Giovanni, but Giovanni has so far forgotten Elvira that he attempts to seduce her before realizing his mistake. The Don gets away as quickly as he can, leaving Leporello to explain to Elvira that if she wants to complain about Giovanni, she will need to take a number, or rather that she already has a number. Giovanni has seduced 2,065 women, and Leporello has helpfully kept a list. 640 in Italy, 231 in Germany, 100 in France, 91 in Turkey, and 1,003 in Spain.
Madamina, il catalogo è questo, delle belle che amo il padron mio, un catalogo è che ho fatto io. Osservate, leggete con me, osservate, leggete con me. In Italia 640, in Lamagna 231, 100 in Francia, in Turchia 91, ma in Spagna, mai in Spagna son già 1,003. 1,003.
Notice that after opening the opera, Leporello is again in the spotlight. The catalogue aria is one of the most famous Mozart ever wrote, and the competition for that title is extreme. I mentioned that Leporello is a basso buffo. Don Giovanni is thought of as a bass baritone, but don't be fooled by the solidity these designations seem to imply. Many singers have, over the course of their careers, sung both roles, although obviously not in the same performance. Matching a role to a voice involves not just note range, but tessitura, style and weight, even temperament. The highest note sung by Don Giovanni and Leporello is the same, and their lowest notes differ by only a whole tone, but the roles are vastly different, both dramatically and stylistically. For many singers, the challenge to excel in both roles, the comic buffo and the suave anti-hero, is irresistible. On the other end of the male vocal gamut, Don Ottavio is not the sexiest character in the opera, but his is some of the most exquisite music. A friend of Don Giovanni's, Ottavio is reluctant to suspect him, but his love for Donna Anna is the driving motivation of his life. His expression of love, the aria Il mio tesoro, is a tenor tour de force, although it is so difficult that it was cut at the Vienna premiere at the request of the tenor. It is now usually reinserted in the second act, while the new aria Mozart wrote for Vienna, Dalla sua pace, is heard here. If bass baritones are driven to get both Don Giovanni and Leporello into their repertoire, and tenors attempted to do both Dalla sua pace and Il mio tesoro, there is a temptation for basses that today goes almost unnoticed. At the premiere, Donna Anna's father, the Commendatore, was played by the same bass as Mazzetto, the peasant who we meet in the next scene. Mazzetto is engaged to Zerlina, whose beauty immediately attracts Don Giovanni. There is no dramatic or musical reason for the same singer to perform Mazzetto and the Commendatore, which is why it is seldom done today. Mozart found it convenient not to have to hire another singer, a purely practical decision common in operas of the day. It is my belief that Mazzetto's aria was actually transposed to accommodate this double casting. The result is a very un-Mozart-like transition at the end of the recitative. Whenever I conduct Don Giovanni, we transpose Mazzetto's aria up a whole tone to where I believe Mozart intended it to be. Don Giovanni's attempt to seduce Zerlina takes the form of a duet, La ci darem la mano. There we will join hands.
La ci darem la mano.
If you are not surprised to learn that the title of the opera is not Don Giovanni, perhaps you will be surprised to hear that this most famous seduction is a duet. By operatic standards, Mozart shortchanges Giovanni when it comes to arias. When you think about it, this makes sense. Don Giovanni is the seducer extraordinaire. We have already seen that he lives only for the moment. This explains why he has no discernible identity when he leaves Anna, no memory when he meets Elvira, and no foresight when he is challenged later by the statue of the Commendatore. But it goes further. Without another person to seduce, Don Giovanni almost does not exist. He is an archetype, not a person, a fact that Mozart subtly underlines by his lack of that basic rite of all opera divas and divos, an aria. The Don is a cipher. That said, the one thing he does have in abundance is charm. And when we forget that, we miss one of the greatest complexities of Mozart's opera. The Don's music is beautiful and seductive. Were he merely a mustachioed villain, everyone would see him for what he is, and he'd be no threat. But Giovanni is so good that God himself has to send someone down to see that he's punished. Don Giovanni's a charmer, but he's not always successful. His flirtation with Zerlina goes badly awry when Mazzetto overhears them, and Selina has to use her own charm to convince her fiancé that he is the only man in her life. The act ends in Don Giovanni's palace, where he has invited Zerlina, Mazzetto and their friends to celebrate the coming wedding. Giovanni's hope is that his seduction of Zerlina will be easier to accomplish if he can dazzle her with his possessions. Mozart places no fewer than three orchestras on stage to emphasize the lavish nature of the entertainment. It's quite a scene, particularly when you realize that the three orchestras are all playing in different musical forms and meters. The first performs a minuet in 3/4 time, the second a contradance in 2/4 time, and the third a peasant dance in 3/8 time. And of course, this also has to be coordinated with the orchestra in the pit. It's beautiful, but it gives conductors grey hair. While Leporello distracts Mazzetto by dancing with him, Don Giovanni takes Zerlina offstage into a private room. When Zerlina screams for help, Don Giovanni tries to pretend it's all a misunderstanding, which he blames on Leporello. The act ends with Anna, Ottavio and Elvira, who have come to the party in disguise, revealing themselves and telling Giovanni they know what he's done. Characteristically, Giovanni responds by running away. Whether we are inclined to think of the women in Don Giovanni as victims or revenging harpies, both the music and the story prevent such a simple interpretation. As Act Two opens, we find Don Giovanni trying to seduce Elvira's maid. To get Elvira herself out of the way, Giovanni switches clothes with Leporello and sends Leporello to serenade Elvira. With Leporello providing the body, Giovanni gives him voice, singing to Elvira of his repentance and renewed love. Elvira is convinced enough to leave the house and go off with Leporello. Notice that this is the second time we have seen a woman unsure if the man next to her is Don Giovanni. His charm is remarkably substanceless. With Elvira out of the way, Giovanni intends to seduce her maid, but he is forced to change plans when Mazzetto and a group of armed men arrive looking for Don Giovanni. He's disguised as Leporello, and Mazzetto and cronies have the same trouble identifying the Don as did the women. Convincing Mazzetto that he too means to harm his master, Giovanni gets Mazzetto alone, disarms, and beats him. Leporello is not so fortunate as his master. His disguise makes him the target of everyone's vengeance. An angry Ottavio, Anna, Zerlina, and Mazzetto surround him and are unmoved by Elvira's pleas on behalf of the man she believes to be Giovanni. They threaten Leporello until the servant has no choice but to remove his disguise. Ottavio is now convinced that Don Giovanni is the man who murdered the Commendatore, and he promises Anna revenge. With most of the town out looking to hurt Giovanni, the Don and Leporello take refuge in a graveyard. This turns out to be the cemetery containing the remains of the Commendatore, which are marked by a life-size statue. One wonders where they got the statue, since it seems to have been erected in record time. Giovanni laughs at his situation, but a voice is heard warning him that he will not be laughing at sunrise. It is the voice of the Commendatore, who means to exact revenge for his abused honour. Giovanni jokingly tells Leporello to invite the statue to dinner, but his servant is too afraid to utter the words, and Giovanni himself completes the invitation. To his surprise, the statue nods its head, accepting. Parlate, se potete, verrete a cena, verrete a cena. The Stone Guest, an animated statue of a man returned from the dead, was an image that horrified and fascinated generations of authors who told and retold Tirso de Molina's original Don Juan story. Here was a man, Don Giovanni, so overflowing with self-confidence that when confronted with the supernatural, he tries to charm and seduce it. Tirso di Molina's ghost is actually a host, not a guest. It lays out a table in the graveyard itself and serves Giovanni a meal of scorpions and vipers. The fearless Giovanni willingly eats them before being struck dead by the statue. In the Mozart opera, justice is delayed while Leporello reluctantly prepares a feast for their fearsome guest, and Ottavio and Anna discuss their own situation. Tirso de Molina's fascination with honour is not da Ponte's. Both Ottavio and the librettist are satisfied relatively easily about the status of Donna Anna's virtue. Mores had changed in the century between Molina and da Ponte, just as they have evolved between da Ponte's time and our own. In the final scene, we find Don Giovanni at home, demonstrating just what a decadent sensualist he is. He's listening to opera. His private orchestra plays tunes from three popular 18th century operas, the last of which is Mozart's own Marriage of Figaro. The other two will not be familiar to modern audiences. One is an opera with a similar story to Marriage of Figaro, and the other is a variation on the Don Giovanni story, also with the libretto by Lorenzo da Ponte. Mozart and da Ponte were both doing a bit of what we would now call product placement. Donna Elvira begs Giovanni to repent, but he laughs at her. As she is leaving, she encounters the supernatural dinner guest. Even the statue is willing to forgive Giovanni if he repents. But he's defiant, and the statue drags him down to hell, accompanied by the screaming of devils. Sinners being cast into hell was a familiar ending for church parables and dramas by the 18th century, but Mozart does it to chilling effect. And yet, no sooner has the seductive Giovanni met his end than we switch to a happy finale in a major key to tell the moral, that this is what happens to all sinners. This ending was often omitted in the 19th and early 20th centuries because performers and audiences alike simply found the switch too jarring. Yet, the ensemble nature of the finale and the return to a happy major key heal the break with decency and virtue that began in the overture. Original sound recordings of musical excerpts used by permission of Warner Classics.